Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Going to be focusing an awful lot on healthcare. We've got a lot on our plate when it comes to healthcare, and I think we need facts surrounding it. I think we have to have a discussion that's open about the cost, the affordability of healthcare in this crisis, but also the quality of it. And you know, are we taking care? Do we have good healthcare in this country? And Can we make it affordable? That's a part of this discussion, I think, is necessary. We see these Obamacare, the ACA subsidies that are going to expire at the end of the year, although there's been conditions set for those to continue until we have at least some kind of consensus in Congress. What will it take to get to consensus in Congress? We'll talk about that today with Montana Congressman Troy Downing here today on Voices of Montana. Let's get right into this. It was December 17th, 2025. The U.S. House of Representatives passed the Lower Healthcare Premiums for All Americans Act. The vote was 216 to 211. And what does that do? How will it fare in the next Congress, so to speak, or in the next House in the Senate? We are going to talk with Troy Downing, Montana's excellent representative for the Eastern District and a guy who's got a ton of experience when it comes to healthcare as well as entrepreneurship. Good morning, Congressman. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. Appreciate that. You have had your experience in this field, which I appreciate an awful lot. And a lot of it has come from, you know, different angles, you know, not just viewing it from the legislative standpoint, but as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as the former auditor for the state of Montana,
the regulator,
so you got a lot of angles from which to understand this with. So I appreciate that. Tell me what this bill is and why you like it.
Well, you know, actually, just going back, you know, you talked about, you know, being a regulator, I'm the only regulator that I'm aware of in Congress. So the only one that's actually seen, you know, how this stuff all comes together that we're dealing with health insurance. And there's a caucus of doctors, there's pharmacists, there's all these other different parts that are in Congress. But I have that sole part, and I've had to deal with, you know, how this whole thing works, you know, what the mechanics are for, you know, filing premiums, what the rules are for approving rates, you know, all of that stuff. So it's been an interesting time in Congress. But the bill that we just passed, you know, there's some stuff in there that, you know, may have bigger effects than others, like the cost reduction piece of the legislation we just passed in Congress. You know, that actually will be meaningful. It cleans up some problems that we've had in how money is allocated and distributed, you know, within the ACA. And so we're expecting that could be an 11% reduction in premium. So that's one of the good things. You know, the other thing that was put in there was the ability to do association health plans.
Yeah.
And the theory there is that associations can set up, you know, larger pools and, you know, multiple employers to try to find cost savings there. And so the association plan is another one. And there was some transparency legislation put into PBMs. And obviously we have some pretty good, you know, PBM laws on the books in Montana already, but that transparency of the prescription drug. So for those who don't know, PBMs is a pharmacy benefit managers, which is the middleman between the drug manufacturers and the health plans. And they've been come under a lot of scrutiny on whether they are creating value that's requisite for the amount of money that they cost. So there's a bunch of stuff going on there, but I'm going to, you know, jump right into it if you don't mind, Tom.
Yeah.
To the, you know, elephant in the room, which is these expiring Obamacare tax credits. And there's obviously a divide in Congress about whether these should be continued or whether they should be allowed to expire tomorrow, which is when they're supposed to expire. And this is all policy that the Democrats put on the books when they had control. They put this, the Obamacare tax subsidies that we're talking about were specific to the COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
And they were put on the books by the Democrats, and they were designed to expire at the end of this year because it was meant to be a temporary fix. But it's been completely inflated what that actually means. Everybody thinks that their rates are going up because of the expiration of these Obamacare tax credits. But, you know, here's the problem. Your rates are going up because costs have gone up, and costs have gone up, you know, ever since the ACA has been in place. And not only have costs gone up, but people have come off of their plans because they don't want to pay the increased premiums. And when people come off the plans, the vast majority are younger, healthier people that come off of those plans that concentrates the risk. And this creates this adverse selection. So every year the rates go up, and every year the risks get higher and the expenses get higher because healthy people are making a decision. Do I want to pay this premium, or do I want to take my risks and go uninsured or go into an alternative like a healthcare sharing ministry or something else? But it's really easy to understand why people are coming to this, because the average premium right now for family coverage is nearly $27,000.
Yeah.
That's a huge number. That's a huge number. And people have to decide. Well, some of them, it's not even a decision. They just don't have the money. And, you know, that's one of the problems. And one of the things that I'm trying to bring into this conversation is not this smokescreen that is these expiring premium tax credits, because that's all this is. This is a failed system that only works if the federal government writes a blank check to, you know, smokescreen the whole thing. And a lot of us are not willing to write that blank check. We need to fix the system and figure out why expenses have gone higher. And here's my opinion. I think one of the biggest contributors to expenses continuing to climb is we've created so much space between the patient and the provider, so the patient and the doctor. And that space has created a lot of problems. It used to be like when I was a kid, we didn't have insurance, and, you know, single income family from a grocery store. And when we'd walk out of the doctor's office, my mom would get out her checkbook and write a check for whatever that fee was, because there was that direct relationship between the payer and the provider. And we put so much distance in there with all of this bureaucracy in what is now the modern healthcare or health insurance system, but there's no incentive for a person to shop for or care what the prices are. So, you know, there's all this talk about transparency of what, you know, a procedure is at one hospital versus another, or one doctor versus another, whereas most people don't care because somebody else is paying for it. Their insurance is paying for it. And so getting back to that, and please excuse me for going so deep into this, because
okay.
I think this really comes to one thing that I think can have a positive effect here, because you keep hearing all this talk about health savings accounts, these HSAs, and they have fairly low limits on them that aren't really reasonable, in my opinion, because the, you know, a family of four has the same cap as an individual, which just doesn't make any sense, because obviously a family of four would be more expensive. But what an HSA is it is a, you know, pre-tax savings account that you can use for paying for, you know, high deductibles, you know, for healthcare. And in my opinion, if you start utilizing more tools like HSAs, where a person, rather than their employer buying an expensive plan or them buying an expensive plan, you have this money going into these savings accounts, so that you're actually part of that decision-making process of deciding, you know, what doctor you want to see, what hospital you want to go to, what is a reasonable cost for something, and what tests you want to do or don't. You have that conversation with your doctor, and your doctor may say, well, this is an expensive test, but I absolutely, you know, think we need to do it. Or they can say, this is an expensive test that's not really giving us any more information. And then you have an informed consumer that knows that they have a, you know, a limit on those funds in that health savings account, and it allows them to be part of that process. And the obvious question is, what happens then if there's something catastrophic? You know, what if you are in a car accident or need a, you know, liver transplant or cancer or something, God forbid, you know, greater than that? Well, then we go back to what we had in the pre-ACA days, the pre-Obamacare days, and have catastrophic coverage, which is relatively inexpensive, and you know, something that, that most people can do for not a lot of money to deal with those really expensive, you know, one-off things. And I'm not saying this is the, you know, the ultimate thing, but these are the types of things that we need to start looking at so that we can start pushing the cost of health care down. And if you push the cost of health care down, you can start pushing the cost of health insurance down, which is something that is going to strangle everybody if left unchecked.
Montana Congressman Troy Downing with us here again. This House package passed on December 17th. A few items in it. Missing is the extension of the ACA subsidies. We'll get to that in a bit. And Troy, I really appreciate that, because this is what I've been kind of promoting here, is that we need to have a full-on discussion here. When you talk about improving the patient and provider relationship, the incentives, the pre-tax functions, being an informed consumer, adding in the catastrophic medicine, those things are going to take time, and they're going to take some understanding, and you're going to have fans and you know, enemies, so to speak, of plans like that for various agenda reasons. It's been easier to just throw money at the system over the past few years. And so how do we switch that? How do we
Here's the problem, Tom. The problem is there are certain folks on the other side that don't believe in private health, that believe that this should be a single payer system, that we should basically have something like Medicare for all. And I think that's a horrible idea, because first of all, you're going to start rationing health as you start running out of money. Talk about an appropriations nightmare of trying to figure out how much you're putting into that and who gets what kind of care. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any of us want to go in and, you know, take a number to register our car right next to where we take a number to see a doctor. You know, I don't think anybody is, not anybody on my side of the aisle, on the Republican side of the aisle, very happy about that outcome. And so when you talk about, you know, throwing more money at it for the smokescreen, I think there's certain folks on the other part of the aisle that want to see that, because they really believe that, single payer healthcare is the answer. So that's the problem. And then the other problem you have is, you know, there's the policy discussion, which is what we're having right now, and then there's the political discussion. And the political discussion is really difficult right now, especially if you're a Democrat, because, you know, let's face it, Obamacare, the, you know, Affordable Care and Patient Protection Act, that's now about 15 years old, that is one of the biggest landmark pieces of legislation that the Democrats have brought over the last, you know, three decades. And they don't want it to be seen as a failure, because it's such a big landmark piece of legislation. And anytime you come up with a solution like the ones that we just talked about, expanding HSAs, allowing catastrophic coverage, all of that stuff, you know, even short-term plans, they see as being a direct threat to the premise of what Obamacare is. And so there's the political discussion. And just to make this really clear, I think that in the House, a lot of the stuff that we've talked about are things that we can pass. I think we can get that through in the House, because in the House you only need a single vote majority. And here's the difficult part in having it become law, is you need 60 votes in the Senate. And without those 60 votes, and that's, you know, seven Democrats, without that, it's really hard to take this policy and have it become law, because of the political implications that I just talked about. And so that's the struggle that we have as we go down this path. And I'm hoping that we can get more Democrat buy-in that, you know, that don't want to see a path that only works with single payer, with, you know, a completely federally subsidized plan, and see this as alternatives, and give the people what they want, give them control of their own health care, not have it be the, you know, the payers, the health insurance companies, and not have it be the federal government. Have, you know, put it into your own hands through these tools that we've talked about, and get what's right for you, rather than having the government dictate that and writing a blank check, where we're already writing too many blank checks for our own, you know, survival, as we see ourselves, you know, go off of this spending cliff in the federal government, which is something that we all see as a big issue.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to balance that policy with the politics, because the politics are very difficult. And I know I'm repeating myself here, but the difficult part right now, because people will say, why can't you get this passed? You have the Republicans have the House, they have the Senate. and they have the White House, why can't you get this passed? Well, the simple answer to that is because of the filibuster in the Senate, and we need to have 7 Democrats to break that filibuster.
And that will be a job. But, you know, what is going to move those numbers is going to be the numbers, in my mind, that show that Obamacare is a failed system. They've done recent studies. They've had fake accounts. There was 2.3 million exchange enrollees that improperly claimed subsidies. These subsidies pay an average of 88% of enrollees' overall premiums. And then you look at insurance companies and how their profits have grown. United Health Group. Now, I did a little bit more of a deeper dive on that as well. And those profit growth is not not remarkable when it comes to other companies as well. But you know, the amount of money that they get from the federal government directly, and those numbers are going to have to come into play here. And to try and maybe move this discussion. So what stands out to you? What stands out to you?
Well, here's the thing that I just want to make sure that your listeners are clear on. Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is probably the largest fraud that has been, you know, put upon the American people in the last 30 years. And the reason I say it's a fraud is everything that we were sold when Obama was first pushing this, that you can, you know, keep your doctor, you can keep your plan, that your premiums are going to go down. All of that was incredibly fraudulent because they knew when they put this together, when they started adding the extra coverages, you can't add extra coverage and have prices go down. You can't add something to your shopping list and expect that your bill's going to go down. It just doesn't work. So they knew that from the beginning. And so they knew that it would require federal subsidies and that they would need to raise a tax for that. But the people would have, you know, rebelled if they just said, we're going to tax you X percent to pay for this. So they were sneaky and they taxed the insurance companies that then passed that taxes on in the premiums. And the reason I'm saying that is because when we're talking about these Obamacare tax credits, the tax credits are to the insurance companies against those tax bills that were put on there when this was designed to hide the reality from the American people that this didn't work without huge, you know, government taxes there. And so these credits are just a credit to that amount of tax that the insurance company is being charged and passing on into premiums. And the reason I'm saying that is the whole thing was designed fraudulently, because there's no way anybody who looks at that, whether you understand healthcare or health insurance or insurance in general, nobody will look at that and say, well, how are you going to put together a program that has all these additional requirements that have to be paid for and have the costs go down? Well, reality check, it doesn't. And so we've seen this thing spiral out of control. And, you know, we need to start, when you mentioned that all the fraud and everything else that's happened there, yes. I mean, I think, you know, some of the things that are being pushed out there right now are all of the folks that have subsidized plans, you know, the millions of folks that are out there with subsidized plans that have never had a claim, never seen a doctor, never seen anything. So the question rises, you know, the insurance companies are getting these federal dollars for that. Are they legitimate? Are they real?
Right.
You know, are they real people? Because if they may, or are they people that even understand that they have a plan there? And so one of the things being thrown out there is requiring some de minimis payment from somebody who's receiving those. So at least we know that they're aware that they have the insurance. So that's one of the things that's being thrown out there to combat that fraud. But it's been such so rife with, you know, alleged and actual fraud that, you know, it would be malpractice for us to not roll up our sleeves and try to figure out how we can start solving for some of those issues. But I keep coming back to the pre-ACA days of let's give people what they want. If you want to just go with a catastrophic, you know, coverage deal or a short-term plan, you should be able to do this. But the ACA specifically made those illegal.
Well, and that's part of the problem here. I remember working for Congressman Reberg at that time, and there were a lot of proposals out there. They were individual. They were a lot smaller. They dealt with tort reform. They dealt with association health plans, more choice, a lot of these things that are going to be needed to reform our system, but they were all just cast aside for this one mandated plan. I know we've got to get you out of here like in about 3 minutes. Did you want to talk? And thanks for the conversation. I mean, we're going to have more of these. Do you want to talk about the Rural Health Transformation Program? Yeah.
Yeah, the Rural Health Transformation Program. This is a huge win for Montana. This was something that came in the Working Families Tax Cuts Act, or the Big Beautiful Bill Act, whichever title you want to give it, the reconciliation bill. And we put $50 billion out for dealing with rural health care. And half of that gets just by state, you know, is automatically put to, you know, put to the states to pay for supporting rural and you know, critical access, you know, healthcare. So that part is already done. And then the states apply for additional funds for specific programs. And Montana just received $233 million of that in 2026 for this Rural Health Transformation Program. And I've spoken to stakeholders, groups from the hospitals in Montana, as well as the Department of Health and Human Services and state. And they put together a plan that deals with workforce recruitment, training, retention, programs for sustainability of rural health facilities, of innovative care delivery and payment models. There's all this stuff that is going to really help that frontier critical access rural health care in Montana. So I'm really excited about that. And one of the things that I've said in my conversations is obviously I was part of the congressional piece of this, of putting this bill or helping pass this bill and making sure that that $50 billion was appropriated. But now it's in the hands of the state, and I just want to make sure, and I do believe they are, that everybody is looking at how this can actually create a lasting impact to make sure that we don't see any further issues of a lot of our rural health care that's been struggling for so many years. So I'm really excited to see this actually come through, and excited that, you know, we got such a big bite of the apple on that, because it's going to be meaningful for our rural health care in Montana.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's targeted in the right direction when you're targeting that money for rural health care in Montana, because as you noted, there's a few things to shore up.
Well, so many of these places just struggle. I mean, they struggle. Yeah. Recruiting and retaining employees and recruiting and retaining doctors. They struggle with aging populations and fewer self-pay or self-insured people going to them, you know, so more and more Medicare, Medicaid payments. So there's so many things that they struggle with, and having these innovations and this workforce development and all this stuff that we're planning on doing with this money, I think is going to be transitional and meaningful to healthcare in rural Montana.
Congressman, I appreciate you having this conversation with us here and the constituents across Montana, and what you're doing. I know you're meeting with insurance companies and providers and constituents and other colleagues as well. So thank you for that. And we'll be knocking on your door again. Okay.
Well, great. Well, hey, I appreciate the opportunity to get this out. I know some of it might get a little wonky, but I mean, this is all meaningful. This affects everybody in the state, affects everybody in the country. We need to make sure that we figure out what to do about the delivery of health care in this country.
Excellent. Thank you. Have a happy new year. Appreciate you, sir.
Happy new year to you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.